It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show, and today we are looking at Sakura Genesis, a New Japan show from last weekend, where lots of cool stuff went off, and there was a few other bits and pieces. To join me today, we have our regular contributor, Mr. Alex Edwards. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's been a little while, hasn't it? There's been a lot of sort of schedule conflicts that have meant that I've not been around much over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
But I'm back. I'm back for Sakura Genesis.
And we're in my hometown last week when I wasn't there.
On the high street, just hanging out.
Yeah, Robbie Street, Greg's. Yeah, it's all good. And also joining us today is Miss Emily Reed, promoter, ring announcer, drinker of tea. Is there anything else you would like to be announced as?
Drinker of whiskey.
Drinker of whiskey as well.
Drinker of tea and whiskey. That's all I do.
At the same time or separated?
No, God, no, you crazy man.
Nothing wrong with some Irish tea.
No, you can't do that to the tea. The tea is sacred. You have the tea on its own. And then the whiskey, a nice single malt again on its own. Ice, just... Okay. As it comes.
Right then. And Emily is of XWO and Pro Wrestling Eve fame. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. We had scheduling conflicts because I wanted to come chat to you guys earlier.
Yes, but we're glad to have you here at last.
Hey.
So, Emily.
That sounded really unenthusiastic. I had the dog cuddling me and aww. I'm going to ignore her now. She's not here.
So, Emily, how long have you been a New Japan fan and how far into the product are you?
See, when the Wrestling Channel came on, I started watching Noah.
Right.
And really discovered that Japanese wrestling is my thing. I'd kind of started not enjoying WWE quite so much and really was enjoying that. But I was not introduced to New Japan until quite recently, really. I started... really, really getting into it at G1. Yeah. So I was watching it casually and watching matches here and there. And then with G1, I was fully in. I'm the typical obsessive geek. So it's pretty much, I have to kind of dip my toe in ever so slightly to see if I want that in my life, because once it's there, I'm all in.
Fair enough. Cool. Well, let us get on. We started Sakura Genesis, which was at Sumo Hall, and they had an absolutely packed out hot crowd for this show as well. We should probably mention that because they were hot for everything through this, like even more than like Sumo Hall crowds are, and they're notoriously loud by Japanese standards, and they were really loud for this. But we started with a dark match, which featured young David Finlay, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Manabu Nakanishi, who defeated the young lions Hiroa Kawata, Katsuya Katamura, and Tomoyuki Oka in 7 minutes. I thought this was a fun match, and I think this particular group of young lions have a lot more personality than previous groups of young lions, if you don't mind me saying. Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I thought this was a fun match, and the young lions are really the standouts here. I think the current crop we've got, where you've got your sort of your big sort of ox power guy with Oka, who's sort of a Nakanishi type of guy, in that he looks exactly like Nakanishi. Kitamura, who's just absolutely jacked. Like, that guy has an insane physique, and it's something we haven't really seen in New Japan since sort of like Strongman a few years ago. Who wasn't very good, but Kitamura is actually quite good from what we've seen of him so far, even if it has only been a couple of these opening matches. And then you got Kawato, the sort of underdog fiery baby face who's always wanting to get into the fight, and I think they're all really good. On the other hand, though, you've got someone from the last crop of young lions in David Finlay, who I think is a little bit lost at the moment. Like, so you look at the other guys who are in the class with him. You've got Tempura Boys now in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
You've got Jay White now touring around Ring of Honor, Rev Pro, around the scene. And then you've got Juice Robinson, who, as we'll see later on in this show, has made his way up the card and is now potentially in a main event match. And then you've got David Finlay, who's just sort of, he's been bumming around these opening matches, these multi-man tags. He sort of hasn't really found an identity. It's a bit like, I don't know. It's just that he seems a bit lost.
Having said that, in this match, I think he grew a little bit because he did paintbrush Kawato quite stiffly. I know Don Callis was commenting, he's found the aggression his father used to have. And I thought, yeah, actually, he's looking a lot more like Dave Finley III rather than Dave Finley IV at the moment. And he did have that initial rush when he came up to the main roster where they won the trios titles, and he seemed to have pretty much got it made at that point. But I can see what you're saying, certainly.
Oh, I think the problem with Finley is actually a really simple fix. There is a problem. I always say he's not fitting in, but he's a heel. He is one of the most unlikable, arrogant kind of people naturally. I'm sure he's awesome. I've never met him, and I'm sure he's a totally awesome guy. But look at him when he walks out with that swagger. Am I allowed to swear?
You're allowed to swear. We will beep out the F and C words, but you're allowed to swear.
Oh, I was about to say, I just stopped myself from swearing. But he swaggers when he comes out. He's just got that natural young man arrogance, just really just absolutely flying off of him. Did you see his body movement when he won?
Yeah.
How he's all cocky, leaning against the ropes. The man will be so easy to dislike. He's a heel.
Yeah.
He just is. He's so arrogant. He would be suited perfectly to really be able to... Girls! Sorry. To really be able to show that. And I think that is when he will really shine through. And that's going to be him in his element. He is like his dad.
Yeah.
And it will be natural movement for him to be like that. And I'm looking forward to them developing that more, and due to the fact that he's not hiding his body mannerisms and he's not hiding that swagger, I think, or I'm hoping, that's how they're going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I watched his dad wrestle for 35 years, you know, and I see so much of Dave Finley III in Dave Finley IV, really so much, you know, and that's not a knock on him, because if it worked for his dad, so it's going to work for him. But you've got to focus it and see where you can make it work. And there's nothing wrong with having arrogant faces, but it's not the right kind of arrogance, is it?
It just seems to naturally come from him.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to develop, because I think there's a lot of potential. But I think if they don't run down that particular path, I think he's going to fall flat. Yeah. I think that's where it is for him.
I was just going to say, I think that's exactly it. He's always been a good wrestler, and you can still see it here where he is good in the ring. It's just that character that needs fixing, and maybe a heel turn is what's needed. Maybe him showing off more of that swagger is what he needs to do and what the company needs to do for him.
Yeah, yeah. It should be interesting to see him develop, certainly. Emily, what did you think of the match in general?
I thought it did what it needed to do. The unfortunate thing, now the problem I have is I'm struggling remembering their names apart from Oka.
Kawato and Kitamura.
Kitamura, that's the...
The gigantic guy is Kitamura.
Yeah. See, there's a lot more personality, as you were saying. I think Kitamura, he's going to tear. He's going to tear something.
Yeah.
I give him a year before something. I'm going with a tear, but just an injury in general. So I know it's exciting and it's great to see someone that big and it's impressive, but like, he's got no flexibility in his muscles. We've all seen guys built like him and they tear. They just injure. It's what happens.
Yeah.
So for him, I'm waiting for him to tear. And the little dude, he's got so much personality and I really like watching him, but it's unfortunate that he kind of had like an angle starting at the end of the match, but his performance, he's performed so much better and I felt really bad for him.
Yeah.
Because he really could have done with his strong performance in this match to go with him pushing at Liger at the end. So I felt bad for him, but he's got a lot. He's the one I'm the most excited about, I would say.
Fair enough. I think that's interesting observation, certainly. And yeah, I would agree with you. It's it is worrying when you see guys who are absolutely ripped, and it's like, yeah, you're a Japanese wrestler. You don't need to be quite that ripped. You need a bit more body fat to protect you from all those horrible bumps you're going to have to take.
I don't think anyone needs to be that big. Just the flexibility is just so important, especially in wrestling. Like, look at RVD and the type of injuries he didn't get.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had such flexibility going with that muscle. It's very important. Also, Japanese wrestling, you need to be able to go, and you need that cardio.
Yeah.
Being that muscular, it's just going to bloody burn through it. You see it in UFC all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Okay, then we move on to match two, which was the opening of the full show, which featured Bullet Club, Chase Owens, Tama Tonga, Tangaroa, the Gorillas of Destiny, Jujutsu Hiro Takahashi with Pieta, I think that's how you pronounce it, that's the lady in the bunny ears and the thong. They defeated Tiger Mask W, Togi Makabe, and Yuji Nagata in a fun match that did what it said on the tin, really. I like Tama Tonga's quote coming up. Why do I have to wrestle two Tiger Masks? We need to retire one. Which was a nice piece of heel work. I like that. Emily, what did you think of this one?
Nothing spectacular, but I enjoyed it. Tama Tonga, I always enjoy watching. I think he's funny,
yeah,
which is always good. Tiger Mask W got some good spots in. Tiger Mask, I thought, seemed like it. Sometimes it's like he can still bring the magic, and I felt like it's that. Tiger Mask W had some interesting scars on his chest.
I was a bit
worried about him. Don't know how that happened. Could have been anything. I think he had caught a zebra and was cooking it, and some water got in the fat in the pan, because they look like burns.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah, he's just like, he's like a cook part-time, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's almost as if someone set some fireworks off across his chest.
Just almost like that.
Who would be silly enough to do something like that?
It's crazy people.
Yeah. But yes, so Alex, what did you think of this match?
I thought it was fine. Nothing too spectacular, but why is Tiger Mask W still a thing? Why is he there? Like, we've torn the mask off before, we know who it is, and he was doing all of Kota Ibushi's moves in this match. He wasn't even trying to hide it. I'm with Tama Tonga. Why are there two Tiger Masks?
if we are maybe doing that, I would say, from working with Kota, he has definite ideas. He's so extraordinarily creative. And if he has an idea that he wants to carry out, that's what he wants to do, and he will not bend on it. He's an artist, is probably the best way of putting it. So even if you were to say something like, gosh, these fireworks are particularly big, these are not the ones that you should really use. If he thinks that he definitely should use them, then that is probably what's going to happen. I was just going to say, I just assume whenever I'm looking at this, I don't like it, but I just assume he really wants to do it. And that's that he's like, sure, if you want to use me, though, I'm Tiger Mask W. And he just wants to. That would be my Tiger Mask W is a thing, because that's what Kota wants to do. And if they want Kota to wrestle for them, he's Tiger Mask W. That's a guess, but that would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he is having a lot of fun doing it. And maybe it is one of those things where he's just doing it because he is having fun. I'm just thinking of all the sort of fantastic main event matches we could be having with Kota Ibushi in there at the moment. And instead, we've got Tiger Mask W against Bullet Club.
One thing to add to that, if you look back at the video that Lariato put online of Kota on the car with the fireworks, Dan, that's Emily's husband, running underneath with the biggest scared big eyes I ever saw. Just something for you to go back and look at. He looked slightly concerned.
He was, oh my goodness. I thought he was going to have another stroke. We'd clearly said these, you know, they only had... because it was meant to be tiny little ones, and we're like, they only have these bigger ones, we've just kind of got one to be like, we did try, don't use this though. And I remember I glanced up and he was looking at a video of what that particular one did.
Right.
And I saw his eyes change and I was like, oh shit. But I didn't know for sure because it was very clear that we thought, no. But yeah, that's why Dan's wonderful reaction.
Oh well, it's in the past now, but it was good, so we'll move on.
Oh, it looked amazing, and there's pictures where it looks like a jailbreak. It's just beautiful.
Okay, then we'll move on to match three, which was Chaos, Rapingi Vice, and Yoshihashi defeated Suzuki Gun, Del Desperado, Minoru Suzuki, and Taka Michinoku. It was all right. Nothing to write home about. It was Minoru Suzuki, who's always awesome. And so are RPG. And Yoshihashi's good. And so, but it's just them. I didn't really have an awful lot to say about this. So, Emily, what did you think?
Same, really. I love watching. Well, I'm not a Yoshihashi fan, but the rest of them, I love watching, especially Suzuki. But yeah, nothing special, but fun to watch.
Yeah, spinning the wheels a little bit. What did you reckon, Alex?
As far as the match, yeah, same as you guys, nothing much. It was okay. But this left me with a few thoughts. The first of those being, they really need to just unify the tag titles because Roppongi Vice are such a good team and they're being wasted at the moment in this junior tag division where it's just them, Suzuki-gun, and that's about it because the Young Bucks are away until August, is it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just, there's no one else for them to wrestle. It's just dead. So think of all the potential matchups that could come with just unifying those tag divisions. I don't see what, like, I can understand it for the singles divisions. That makes sense to me. That's fine. But the tag, I don't know.
But the daft thing is, we were having the same conversation 6 months ago because we thought the heavyweight division was useless.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's just flipped. And there's just having two tag divisions like this just doesn't work for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
The second thing is, do we think that Suzuki-gun's return to New Japan has been a bit of a flop? Because Suzuki is fantastic, always enjoys matches, he's always good, but he hasn't really done too much. Since that match with Okada, he hasn't really done too much. He's just been floating around these sort of mid-card multi-man tags. And I think part of the problem may be that the roster right now in New Japan is overloaded with too many good guys. Yeah. And it seems like a weird problem to have too many good wrestlers on your roster. But it means that, I mean, look at every card from this past 6 months. At least half of it has been 8-man, 10-man tags. It's just because there's so many wrestlers they need to get on the shows that there's no places for them. And so do you think that because of that, bringing Suzuki-gun back, as they just sort of slotted into a mid-card that's sort of just a mishmash of randoms and they haven't really done anything of too much impact?
I think maybe, I mean, the Okada-Suzuki match was fantastic and I think possibly they could have held that off. They could have had him, but they're tied because they need to bring him back and have a big impact. So they have to go and gun up against Chaos and Okada to get that kind of impact and get that kind of rub. But then what do you do with them? So I see what you're saying with that. And maybe if they could have held off Suzuki versus Okada till just before G1, then they maybe would have had a bit more development long term. And I certainly think the lack of a Noah to farm people off to is problematic for them. I don't know. Emily, what do you think?
I think the roster certainly has got heavy. It's pretty stacked, but I actually disagree. I think they, as you say, they had to come in heavy. He had to go straight for Okada because obviously that's what he would do. And you have to, especially with Japan, with New Japan, the thing I love that people are pretty true to their character.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really like that. So it's less heel and face, more characters and how they would react in certain situations.
Yeah.
And that is what he would do. And it was very believable. It was a beautiful match. The thing I've noticed with their booking is they take their time and they, I would say they don't rush things. And the reason I would say it's not a flop is because of what happened later in the show. And I think it's more that they pace, and we've got the Never title, and we've got the Intercontinental with Naito, and there's nothing spectacular going on there. And I think they're pacing and getting their time to get some hot stuff going throughout the card.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I would say it's not a flop, because they're taking their time, and I think we're going to get some really special matches that aren't just Okada. I mean, Okada's like doing Match of the Year contender every bloody month now, and that's awesome. I flip in love watching him, obviously, but there's so much potential for everyone to be doing that and to be doing very high quality matches, and that's what I think they're going to do. If we're a few months down the line and it's still not happening, then I was wrong. But right now, I think we're going to see some special things coming up, and I think we're going to see some bits going on with Goto and Suzuki.
Cool. Okay, then. Well, we'll move on to the first championship match on the card, which was Suzuki Gun, Tai Chi, and Yoshinobu Kanemura, who defeated Jado and Gedo, the world-class tag team of Chaos, 10 minutes and 26 seconds. Again, this was a bit does where it said on this tin. You know, Gedo and Jado are not as world-class as they used to be, sadly, but they did okay. Jado's looking a little bit slow, though, I must admit, but it's difficult to keep up. This was the usual Tai Chi being a slimy bastard. Really? And Kanemura being Kanemura. And it was all right. It did what it says. And they are super, super heels. Tai Chi is easily the most hated guy on the roster now. So, yeah, I think it's doing what it says. Emily, what do you reckon?
Hated it. I don't like Tai Chi. I don't like him. He's
I did say he was the most hated man on the roster.
Yeah, but he's not hated in a good way for me. For me, I would rather skip the match, and because I dislike him. I find his matches bad. I hate the interference. I don't think they do the interference very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does seem slimy and horrible. I'll give him that. But he seems slimy and horrible in a way that I just don't want to watch his matches. I don't even think he's a particularly good wrestler. And I don't want to watch him. I was the same with Jeff Jarrett. I was the same with X-Pac. There are some wrestlers that I just do not want to watch, and he is one of them.
Fair enough. That's okay. You're not the only person who said that. We were talking when we did the last New Japan show. I think it was Chelsea who said that Zack Sabre, or someone said, Zack Sabre Jr. is quite happy to be in Suzuki-gun because he doesn't have to wrestle Tai Chi then. So, fair enough.
That's what I don't like about Suzuki-gun. Can we just slip those guys out of there?
Just Tai Chi and Kanemura?
Just Tai Chi.
Just Tai Chi. Kanemura's cool. Yeah.
And I don't mind. I'm fine. I don't like how he treats his lady either.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's just unnecessary. I strongly dislike him. I should stop talking about him. Really passionately dislike him.
That's fair enough. Yes, this has been. I've had a lot of commentary online about that as well. With Mio Abe, and whether is it the kind of character you can have in this day and age, really? And you know, it's borderline. I certainly think, you know, Don Callis could probably dial it back a bit when he's commentating on those moments, but there you go. Alex.
Thank you very much, Shid.
Yeah. Alex, what do you think?
I mean, the match itself was okay. Like you said, it did what you expected it to do. It was there and it was a match. But yeah, as for Tai Chi, I mean, I can see why people hate him so much, but I'm not quite there. He's just sort of there for me. But I really like Miho Abe. I think sort of her mannerisms and her facial expressions are really good. And she sort of makes up for Tai Chi being just okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I was going to say, it's something that Chelsea's mentioned before. Miho Abe is far more interesting than Tai Chi.
Definitely.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think they make a good duo just because of that. Because she makes him more interesting, and then he's there, he wrestles a bit. But yeah, there was some cool stuff in this match. I think there was one point where Kanemaru did a cool sort of like running, jumping over the barrier leg drop thing to Gedo that was cool. Yeah. And then I couldn't help but flinch when Jado hit that draping DDT on Kanemaru.
Yeah.
Just because of what's happened to Honma based off that move. Like, yeah. Obviously that was like a freak accident, but now every time I see that move, I can't help but think, oh, should you be doing that?
Yeah. Let's have a there's other things you can do. Let's have a moratorium on that for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the match itself is okay. But then afterwards we get Roppongi Vice challenging for the titles again. And yeah. We've just seen that match. We've just done that whole feud. And it just shows again that there's three teams in this division. And now they've done one, they're going to the other. And then they're going to go back to them again and back to them again. It's just going to go on and on forever and be really boring.
Okay.
I think they're going to freshen it up, because although I get what you're saying with unifying the titles, I think if they have to have them separate, if they're keeping the junior and the heavyweight ones separate, then the tag ones do have to be separate, because if not, what's the point of the other divisions?
If
that
makes sense. So it desperately needs something done to it.
Yeah.
It's just, they've got to make more teams.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you've
but
got,
that's, yeah.
You got Dave Finley and Ricochet, who could have a serious run at it, just off the top of my head. And it would give
Dave, I do not think they went together. I think it just makes Finley look really awful. and he's not, but it doesn't make him look.
I'm just saying
good.
That they've been teaming together, so that's the obvious thing to do. I didn't say it would be any good.
Yeah, no, totally.
But yeah, I can understand what you're saying. And I mean, because you were away off Super J Tag Cup, aren't we? So I can't remember the name of the tag tournament. And they don't always run it every year.
Best of Super Junior.
Best of Super Junior Tag. No, I'm the tag one.
I think it's Super Junior Tag League, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, then they don't always run it every year. So
because they don't have enough teams to run it.
Yeah.
Can they find someone for Will?
Yeah.
I know he's just fire. See, everyone wants just Will and Ricochet, just pop them in a team, just somehow.
You'd have to
just
get,
put Ricochet in Chaos then.
Yeah, put Ricochet in Chaos, and that would work.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll figure out.
Nothing's ideal, really.
Well, my plan would be, but whether this would actually work, and you've got about three organisations to figure this out through, but stick Marty Scurll in Chaos, have him tag with Will.
Oh.
Via Ring of Honor. You don't like that?
I don't know why I don't. It would work. I'm not keen on that.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like, I mean, they've got the working relationships with like Ring of Honor and CMLL. So are there any sort of lucha teams or American teams they could bring across? Or I think there's always a problem that they need more sort of homegrown Japanese tag teams.
Yeah, because the majority of their majority of their wrestlers go into singles work.
Yeah. So are there any, I mean, have you got enough juniors that you could just make a bunch of sort of makeshift tag teams out of them? I don't know.
It depends if you call people back off excursion, I guess, really. You got Jay White, but is Jay White really a junior now?
And he's also not Japanese.
Yeah, but I'm just talking people.
I think with Jay White, I'm assuming the fact that they're not keeping him there like Juice and Finley, I'm assuming they want him as like their American guy for when they start, you know, like they plan, didn't they?
Yeah,
and they put out that it's going to be, I'm assuming Jay's going to play a prominent role. This is just speculating.
Yeah.
But the fact that they haven't kept him there and they're trying to get him to build a name elsewhere, it just seems very, I'm wondering if he's going to be a big part.
I think,
for them, for when they're in the States.
I think also it's a long-term plan, isn't it? The guys they send away for a long time, you look at like Takahashi, Hiromu Takahashi was away for a long time and they brought him back and pushed him to the moon. So I think that's possibly something else. They see a lot of things in Jay White, and maybe David Finlay's better. We'll have him here because he's a useful utility player. We can do stuff with him. Jay, go and learn everything you can, come back and we'll give you the big push. So I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And if they do want to start in the States, having someone who speaks English, and they're very... Have you noticed what they're doing to Okada in pictures that they're putting out?
No, what's that?
They're trying to
westernize him.
All right, interesting.
I would say. So they're like highlighting, put white highlighter around his eyes to make them stand out and look bigger. They're making him slightly paler there, and the blonde hair, because in Japan there seems to be a real big feeling that you need to look Western to appeal to a Western audience. So it seems likely that they would want a white person near the top
Fair enough.
When they're doing that. Yeah, I don't agree. I find it ridiculous, especially as the guy that the women go the most crazy for is Shibata. and women, like, just all women seem to completely lose it over him.
Yeah, yeah. Possibly the most Asian-looking guy on the roster.
Exactly. He hasn't done anything to his hair. He just is how he is. But he seems to be the one everyone finds the most attractive.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, then. We'll move on to Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale and Kenny Omega. They defeated Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. The usual classic comedy work between Yano and Omega, who try and out-cheat each other at every opportunity. And I think Yano's slightly winning on the cheating. I'm not sure. But yeah, fun match. Kind of sets up Fale and Omega for things in the future. But again, it wasn't a barn-burning classic. So, Alex, what did you reckon?
I wasn't too much of a fan of this. I think...
You don't like silly Kenny, though, do you?
No, that's the thing. I really don't like silly tights Kenny. It just seems like a bit of a waste to have him in this position, where the match was fine. Like, it's a Yano match, which I always enjoy a Yano match. It's always entertaining. But I just want more from Kenny Omega. Whenever he comes out wearing those silly tights, I just know that I'm not going to care about the match, because he's even said it in interviews that, like, the Road 2 shows and the house shows, he's not putting full effort in. He doesn't want to put full effort into those matches because he wants to save himself for the bigger matches, which, fine, that's okay. You want to save yourself for your big performances, but then why am I bothering to watch this if you're not putting full effort into it?
You probably shouldn't have said that. We could probably figure that out for ourselves, I guess.
Yeah, like, I think he might be, with stuff like this, maybe he's veering too much towards the cartoon side of his sort of cartoon villain character.
Yeah.
And it just gets a bit silly, and I just find myself not really caring. Like, and then, especially with how this show ended, I think that Fale's direction in this match was not great, because he comes off looking a little bit silly. He's been tricked, he's been tripped over, he's been messed about, and his team got the win, but he didn't get the pinfall.
Yeah.
And now he's meant to be the top heel in the company. I don't know, it all felt a bit weird for me.
Okay, Emily, what did you think?
Oh my god, I love this match. I absolutely love this match. When Kenny comes out at the beginning and he just straight said to the camera, you know, this is going to be, what did he say? It's going to be a fun match. I've got my house show tights on. And the thing is, like, of course he doesn't put full effort in those matches, but neither does Okada. But Okada's not funny. and I like that Kenny, when he's going to do that, he's really funny as well. I really like his sense of humor, which I guess helps. I love silly wrestling. It's one of my favorite types, so I'm always going to love these kind of matches. I thought Fale looked great. I loved how Yano and Omega were doing this silly out-cheating, mucking around. And I felt like Fale was like, you know, I can't be doing with this. You know, I'm having none of this. It played along to the beginning and then it went serious. And I thought Fale came along with the, you know, you guys might be having fun, but I'm not pissing about. I'm going to win this match. And I thought he looked serious. But again, it is looking at it in a different way, that it was a funny match. It was really enjoyable. And I thought Kenny managed to be silly, but still show that he's a very good wrestler, and that when he wants to get it done and when it's over, it's over. And so I thought it kept him credible while having a lot of fun. And I think that's a delicate balance. And for me, it worked, but I can see it is a delicate balance. And obviously for you, it completely didn't. But I love it when he comes out in his silly tassily tights. I know what I'm going to see. I know I'm going to see an enjoyable match.
And also, I want him to last. He's an amazing wrestler. I want to keep seeing those beautiful, brilliant matches from him. I don't want people like Kota, who doesn't seem to understand how to dial it down.
Yeah, yeah.
He's worrying. I mean, people were saying on the house shows when he was doing the Cruiserweight Classic, that is what it's called, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
CWC, yeah. Mm-hmm. When he was doing that, people were saying in the house shows, he was going for it. He was going full steam ahead.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Not good, though.
But there's a finite level of life to that. You know,
Koya's not in good shape.
No, the first time.
So, I worry.
The first time I saw Kota Ibushi was King of Trios 2011, and he wrestles exactly the same style now as he did 6 years ago.
You have to change. And I mean, Marufuji is a beautiful example of someone who has changed and changed their style so that they can keep doing and keep having great matches. And Kenny and Okada are people who only bring it in for the big matches. It's just Okada's doing the big matches every month, but still.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a finite amount of time you can do that for as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I remember Yoshirai saying after she had five defense run with the first time she held the Stardom Championship, she never wanted to wrestle a serious wrestling match again. She's going to do comedy matches for the rest of her career because it nearly killed her, you know. Because she was trying to establish herself as the ace of the company and trying to establish Stardom, and she had a lot of pressure on her, so she went and did it. But you can't do that match in, match out for years on end. It's not physically possible.
No.
Not sensible either. Anyway, so we move on to match six, which is Taguchi, Japan. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, Ricochet, and Raisuke Taguchi in his new coaching role as the leader of Taguchi Japan against Los Ingobernables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, Sanada, and Tetsuya Naito. I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was really, really cool. Juice Robinson pins Tetsuya Naito and instantly challenges for the Intercontinental Championship. Emily, what did you think of this?
Beautiful match. Yeah. Absolutely lovely setup. I love what they're doing with Juice. I love how they're pushing him, how it's been slow and steady, how it's not sudden wins out of nowhere, and how much the crowd are behind him is lovely to see. And I don't know if it's... I think some of it is genuine. I know Dan will mock me sometimes because I'll fully believe it, you know, just fully buy into things, but that's how I enjoy. But the latest one was, I genuinely thought, if you saw people in the crowd, I thought they sat and watched the whole show.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, Emily, they're just there for that bit. And then they go back. I'm like, oh, I just assumed. Like, I'd want to watch the show. I just, it's kind of heartbroken. Like, I would sit and watch the damn show. I got really good seats. I'd never even considered that wasn't what they'd do. But when he got the pin, like, he was doing his normal celebration and then his chin wobbled.
Yeah.
And I know he could have been like really playing up that it was emotional. But to me, the chin wobble, I see it on my kids. The chin wobbles when you're trying to hold it together.
Yeah.
You suddenly get that hit of emotion and then you're like, pull it together. It's fine.
It was that and chin then wobbled. That and then like hugging Tanahashi, and like you could tell that this was like the biggest win of his career, and he really was so happy that he got this win. I thought he did really well there.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think then, Alex?
Yeah, I think the match was really good. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it might be like the 9,826th time we've seen LIJ versus Taguchi Japan multi-man tag match just this year.
I think that's three, by the way. But carry on, yeah.
It just seems that every show they have one. But yeah, I really enjoyed the match. Like, you had your silly stuff with Taguchi doing his like ass offense and the old sort of Sanada kicking Taguchi up the ass spot, which is always fun.
It's fun.
but then you also get like Ricochet just being like insanely fast moving, and just like he hit like 20 moves in 30 seconds. It was insane.
Yeah.
Including two dives to opposite sides of the ring. Ricochet is so good. And everything he does just looks so fluid and so beautiful. Then you get like Evil and Tanahashi having their exchanges, setting up a match with them, which is really good. And just everything built in this match to the perfect end with Juice finally getting this big win and challenging for the Intercontinental title, which, like Emily was saying, his push has been so well done, where it's been slowly built up. He's slowly got slightly bigger and slightly bigger and slightly bigger wins building up to this one.
Yeah.
And it was just really, really well done. Really well sold afterwards with, like we were saying, his emotion. And then Naito as well, where for a second I was like, wait, has he actually hurt his shoulder or something? Like, his selling was really good there. And yeah, I thought this match was absolutely perfect for what it needed to be.
Yeah, and I mean, also, you look back at Wrestle Kingdom, and Juice loses to Cody, and it was like, things are falling apart for him here. But it wasn't. It was just part of the master plan, and we should have faith in the master plan every sometimes. So yeah, it was really, really good. Okay, then, match 7 was War Machine, Hanson and Raymond Rowe defeating Tenko Z, Hiroshi Tenzan, and Satoshi Kojima, 14 minutes and 6 seconds for the IWGP Tag Team Championship. Of course, Tenko Z won the championships last month as substitutes for GBH. Kind of thought they would lose them to War Machine. To be honest with you, it was predictable that they would lose because Tenzan and Kojima have been there before and they were a stopgap in the nicest possible way, because actually Tenko Z really pulled out all the stops in this match, and I think it was the best performance they've had as a tag team in a long, long time, and War Machine were excellent. So, Alex, what did you think?
Yeah, just that. This match was much better than I expected it to be. Like, Tenko Z are the veteran tag team that a lot of their matches, you can tell they've slowed down a bit, but they can still pull it out when they need to.
Yeah.
And this was one of those cases where they really pulled it out. They put on a great match, and I think War Machine were some really good opponents for them, where you just have these huge, like, bruisers coming in, just beating the hell out of them. And the way the crowd reacts to War Machine is great. Like, the anticipation from the crowd, as I think it was Hanson was climbing up the turnbuckles and did that moonsault. Just the reaction from the crowd was great. And yeah, I really enjoyed this match. And I think, contrary to what we were saying a few months ago at the start of the year, the heavyweight tag division now looks to be in really good hands with the War Machine. So yeah, I was really happy with this match, and I'm excited to see where we go with War Machine as champions.
Emily, what did you think of this?
War Machine are amazing. I would love to work with them. And it's actually something Dan will tell you how much I bugged him. Like, you need to watch this War Machine match. You need to watch this War Machine match. And I even pitched the idea, I think genius, that when Damo was going, I felt that we should just, instead of getting there, because he was our champion for XWA, I felt that we should just bring in one member of War Machine and just pretend it was still him. I thought that was a beautiful idea. I was like, just bring him in and then casually start slipping in his name and it'll be fine. I think that there was something to that, like Fake Diesel, you know, Fake Damo. It's an awful, it was an awful idea, but I found it super amusing at the time. It was a great match though. I love Tenzan and Kojima so much. I just want to cuddle them both. They can still go, and if they need to. I love, like, with G1 with Tenzan.
He was the highlight of the G1 last year for me. He was so good.
Yeah.
He was so good. And I know some people were saying, like, he was doing well and then he lost too much and they thought that was throwing it away. But I thought that was the beauty of it, that it showed that in his mind he could still go, but it was his body letting him down. And that was, when you watched him, that is what was happening. His body can't quite do it anymore.
Yeah.
So he was going for these moves and he was going for running, but the man can't really run. And I liked that. I thought they were running with what they had. And their friendship is just beautiful. And I mean, there's bread and just running with a ridiculous hairstyle. Oh, I want them let's just hope they don't come to the UK, because I'm going to have a super weird interaction with them. I'll be trying to smuggle bread into York Hall.
You wouldn't take your trademark pink hair for frosted tips, though, would you?
I wouldn't do what with my pink hair?
You wouldn't go with, like, the Tenzan frosted mullet?
I'd, well, no, it can't go into a mullet, but I could for him. oh, now I have to. I'd re-bleach the front just a little bit. I'd style it up. I think I can do that. And then I'll just see. I'd want a piggyback, but it might hurt them. But I would cuddle them. Oh, they wouldn't like it. They would not like it because it's not an appropriate thing to do to Japanese wrestlers. But I would do it. So it would be fine. They're super polite, so I think they'd just be like, oh. And then I'd just hold them for an uncomfortable amount of time. I just keep saying things like, oh, bring it in. Oh, I just keep making that noise. So, yeah, that's what I thought of the match, though. I mainly thought about cuddling and thinking, God damn, War Machine are super good. Oh, yes. I would cuddle that person there. I don't want to cuddle War Machine.
You don't want to cuddle War Machine. I must admit, I saw War Machine wrestle London Riots in progress in a no DQ street fight, and they did not strike me as cuddly then. No.
They're nice. My daughter misheard the ring announcer and thought one of them was called Panda. So now whenever I see them, I'm like, it's Panda.
Chuck some face paint on and, you know, new gimmick right there.
Yeah.
I think they could, they're so talented. I think one of them could be a panda.
Write a letter to Joe Koff and say, here, we want to give you this booking idea.
You're Damo. You're a panda.
Damo and Job a panda. Man. Damo and the panda. There you go. It's like
I'm
a children's TV show.
I'm the best promoter.
Moving on.
Maybe.
The NEVER Openweight Championship was defended successfully by Hirooki Goto in 16 minutes and 16 seconds against Zack Sabre Jr. I really enjoyed this match. I really, really love the best thing about this match is Zack Sabre Jr. trying to apply the gym break special to Hirooki Goto in 2017, because that's just awesome. It's just the best thing ever. I loved it just for that moment, and it will live on in my heart forever. Alex, what did you think of this match?
I enjoyed it. I thought the match was good. I really like you said, Zach, with all his technical submission stuff, trying to do stuff on Goto that didn't quite work, but yeah.
I don't want to know, that double arm lever looked hideous.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. And then you have Goto come out and just beat the shit out of him. like, get off me, what are you doing? I think what let it down a little bit was the interference, but at least in this match, unlike the junior tag title match, at least in this one, it was to properly set up an interesting match for the future. So I could forgive it. I mean, it's what you're going to get with Suzuki Gun matches. But yeah, I thought this match was good. I thought Zach and Goto were both good. And yeah, good stuff.
Emily, what are your thoughts?
I absolutely loved this match. Well, the Pappy interference aside, it was a beautiful match. Zach was absolutely right for going to wrestle where he did. The Japanese crowd appreciates his style of wrestling in a way that I don't think an American crowd quite could.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I loved that they bought into it. They believed that Zach, because of his style of wrestling, could beat Goto. They fully bought into it, I felt. The crowd was just hot for the whole show, as you said.
Yeah.
I love his style of wrestling. I love how mean he is and how he like digs in his elbows, how he does all the little details. And that is why he's a perfect fit for Suzuki Gun. I think him and Suzuki just are perfect with each other, especially if you want to go with like, you know, like the Catch as Catch Can connection and Billy Robinson and go down that line. Yeah. I feel a bit rambly on this one.
No, but you're right. I mean, I was going to say that like the Jim Bricks thing with the Jim Bricks special, it's not just that. There's so much Jim Bricks in Zack Sabre Jr., like just his character and the way he works and the, I call it the annoying little bastard heel that Jim Briggs was. He does that really, really, really well.
Oh, so well. I love him as a heel so much more. So, yeah, the match I thought was brilliant. And then, as you say, you had Goto just start using his power and beating the piss out of Zach. And then you had shitty interference. Sorry, the Pappy interference.
You're allowed to say it's shit.
Always,
that's okay.
It's always poorly done, I feel, their interference. I really think someone just needs to sit down and figure it out and work on their interference, because it's just not good. But I will forgive it because of what followed, and it was spectacular. It's setting up something I care about. I love seeing him. I love seeing it. I'm a massive fan, obviously, as you can tell. So him really losing it and being genuinely angry, like maybe a little bit more angry than he normally gets angry. I also like that one of the young lions turned and like bent so he could hit them with the chair, so he ignored that one. Now I'm gonna hit this guy and then I will hit you, and now I am happy. he's perfect. All of his little details are so spot on that he seems psychotic, but if you watch it, he's walking such a fine line so that he doesn't hurt people. Like if a fan touches him and he knocks them away, he never swings his arm until their hand is far enough away that he can fully swing them out of the way without actually hitting them.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah.
That's smart. But yeah, it's set up a match I really, really want to see.
Excellent. Cool. Match 9, Hiromu Takahashi of Los Ignorables de Japón defeats Kushida in possibly the New Japan Shock of the Year. 1:56, Takahashi destroyed Kushida with 2 time bombs. There's not a lot to say about this match because it didn't last long enough, but the obvious thing is the story of they're burying the idea of Kushida being the ace. For whatever reason, we do not know, but that's basically what happened here. Emily, what did you think of this one?
Dan was a complete arse when Kushida did that thing. He went, wouldn't it be great if this was like a really short match? And then it was. And he does things like that, and he's so annoying. He's just super annoying. He's why, like, you never want to go to like a WrestleMania viewing party with him, because it'll be like, oh, they're going to do this spot now, and then they do, and it's super annoying. And he doesn't seem to get why that might spoil it for some people. And it's like, because you're right. You are always right. And it kind of takes away from the drama. But yeah, Dan could see that coming. It's exciting. It's going to freshen up the division. I'm hoping, because Kushida's so sweet and little, I don't know if he's injured and needs some time off, or if they maybe want to have him chase and build back up again.
Yeah, I think that's probably the obvious thing.
Get the crowd really loving him again and have him at the bottom and keep it fresh going on. I'm not sure. I don't know what their plan is. They're just the kings of long-term booking, so I trust in them. Super cool, super different for them. And, you know, a shock if you don't have Dan near you.
Alex, what did you think of this?
Oh man, this match was great. Like, I really, really enjoyed this. The thing with the Kushida thing where it seems a bit like a burial, I think it is a longer story that they've been building. I think this is something I've seen batted around on sort of Reddit and Twitter, that the overall story seems to be that Takahashi comes in at Wrestle Kingdom, beats Kushida after that fantastic, like, long, brutal match. And then Kushida thinks to himself, right, this guy is fucking mental, and I can't go into a match with him and treat him like a normal competitor again. So he sort of sits back. He watches Hiromu's matches with Dragon Lee, with Taguchi. And he comes up with a plan of like, right, if this guy is mental and he's insane, I'm going to have to
be overly mental.
I'm going to have to be the same. I'm not going to be able to wrestle him normally. I'm going to have to beat him at his own game. And so that's why he does the big dive before Hiromu even gets into the ring. He brings it right to him and he goes for a really quick finish, gets the hoverboard lock, and he's trying to end the match as quickly as possible. But Hiromu, just being crazy, manages to outdo that and manages to just destroy him in a matter of seconds with 2 moves. And I think it's a really good story that you have Kushida, who was for so long built up as the ace. Someone finally comes along and beats him, and he just can't take the loss. He's just like, what? No, I'm the ace.
Yeah.
I'm the one that should be winning. So now I'm going to come up with this plan to beat you, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so now he's got to go back to the drawing board again and think, right, how can I beat this guy? All his focus is on this one guy. How can I get back to being the ace of this division? And I think it's a really cool story. And I think that having such a short match perfectly helps that story and perfectly educates the audience to the fact that a finish can come at any time. It's something we saw in WWE over the last few months with Brock Lesnar and Goldberg, where at Survivor Series, that match ends really quickly. At WrestleMania, that match ends really quickly. And it's something that the New Japan audience are also being educated to now, where just wait and see over the next couple of months, whenever, if someone goes for a finish right at the start of a match, that crowd's going to go crazy because they know this match could end that quickly.
Yeah.
They're, because they've been educated so far to, oh, well, every big title match is going to go sort of 20, 30 minutes before it ends. Now they're thinking, wait, no, it could end in a minute. I really like that. I really like that booking move. It really, it opens things up and makes everything so much more interesting going forward.
I think as well, this kind of echoes a time period we had in the early 90s where New Japan was going through the stratosphere, and this was when they were doing the Tokyo Dome four times a year and getting 50,000 each time. And it got to the point where their big stars were having stadium show finishers. Their regular finisher wasn't good enough because the wrestlers were trying that hard. And it took a while to calm that down to just having regular finishes that actually finish matches.
Mm.
And it's just another variation on that. Well, if we have like the way we end matches, we're going to have to just do something different because it looks the same all the time. If you're doing it the same all the time. And also, you know, you've had a series of classic matches in the heavyweight and the junior heavyweight division that have told different stories, but they're getting to the point of, well, what can we do next? We've got to bring it down again and start over.
You know what? Actually, it brings us back to when we reviewed the, I think it was the New Beginning card where we had Hiromu versus Dragon Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had Dan on talking about it. And we were saying at the time, like, as good as that match was, where can they go next? Because they did everything in that match. They did absolutely everything a wrestler could ever do in that match. And this is it. This is how they're moving forward. They're just taking it right back to, right, rather than having this long match where we do everything, we're going to hit one big move and end.
Yeah.
And now they can build up again from there. I think, yeah,
Essentially,
it's an interesting move.
Essentially, the match with Taguchi was the first part of the reset. This is the second part of the reset. Now you can move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
They've actually done it with Juice as well. If you think the story of his match with Naito, I would say, is that if he hits his finish, he's won.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would say. Like, Naito sold it just absolutely beautifully. Like, it is an absolutely devastating finish. And I think because of Juice's level as well, that in a way was educating the crowd that this is a finish that ends the match.
Yeah.
You know, just ends it. And I think they are trying to, I like what you said, they're trying to re-educate the audience again.
Yeah. Nice. And you know, it's happened elsewhere, like Impact Wrestling, Eddie Edwards and Bobby Lashley had a run which earlier this year, late last year, that did similar things. You know, it was all about, if Eddie can get the Shining Wizard, that's it. It's done. He's won. So, yeah, it works everywhere. It's universal, and it's a really cool story. You just have to frame it for the people you have at the time. Okay, then, moving on to match 10, which was Kazuchika Okada versus Katsuyori Shibata, winner of the New Japan Cup, and he was staking his claim to the title in 38 minutes and 9 seconds. Okada successfully defends the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in one ungodly match. And we have some sad stuff to talk about at the end of this match, but we'll get to the match first. I'll start with Alex. What did you think of this? I think it's going to be quite positive going out on a limb.
Yeah, so I said to you, James, before we started recording, that as I was watching this match, I was thinking, this is the best match of the year. This is absolutely fantastic. Nothing can beat this. But then in the back of my head, I had Wrestle Kingdom and I had Okada versus Omega. And now I'm torn as to what the best match of the year is, because you've got, back in January, possibly the best match of all time, and then this, which any other year, this would be the match of the year. This was just fantastic, and it just, Shibata is so good. Like, from his offense, where he's legitimately just kicking the shit out of Okada. Like, there's no two ways about it. He's kicking the absolute crap out of him. And Okada, as that sort of the champion that is taking this beating to defend his title, and he's taking everything that Shibata's got, and he's throwing it back at him. And even if he isn't quite doing it as hard, he's standing up to Shibata. And I really like the story of Shibata saying, like, you know, I'm going to make you prove that you're the real champion. I'm going to make you prove yourself and prove that you can really go. And I think Okada answered that perfectly.
Yeah.
There was just so much stuff in this match that was so good. Then we have the sadder stuff with, you know, that headbutt, which we'll talk about afterwards, what it led to. But in the moment of the match, it was a really good moment. But then you have sort of the asterisks next to it of maybe that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But as a match, I really enjoyed everything up until the finish, I guess, where I said this as well to you, where it's sort of like Shibata throws everything he has at Okada, except for the penalty kick, actually, which was an interesting little sort of side note. He didn't hit the penalty kick, like in that Omega match. Omega never hit the one-winged angel.
Yeah, yeah.
But he throws everything else he's possibly got, and then Okada hits a Rainmaker and wins. Mm. Like, it veered a little bit close to sort of Superman booking, but I don't know. I've still really enjoyed this match, and I think this was as close to a perfect match as you could have without it being Okada Omega.
Okay. I would also point out, you've got Okada Omega, then you had a 5-star classic with Minoru Suzuki and another 5-star classic with Tiger Mask W. So, yeah, Okada's on a serious roll at the minute.
And now the biggest challenge in Okada's career is going to come up next month when he has to try and get another 5-star classic out of someone else that we'll talk about in a second.
Okay. Emily, what did you think of this match?
Just an absolutely amazing match. I was the same watching it, feeling like match of the year, but you know it's not, because Okada and Omega I don't think can be beaten. But if you, it's almost like that match needs to be removed from the equation.
Yeah.
Because it was too good almost. Mm-hmm. And so this one, I would say, as much as I'm a Minoru Suzuki fan, this one was better. I love the structure of it. Shibata is an absolute joy to watch wrestle. I love his style, and as you say, I love seeing that it was Okada having to prove himself and absolutely take a beating. And it's a story I think you see in UFC with a lot of fights. There are some fighters who are flashy and they're always good, but you can't fully get behind them until they're in that one match where someone absolutely beats the piss out of them. And they either still win or they manage to go five rounds, and I think it really bonds you with the fighter. And I felt like that's, we were seeing the wrestling equivalent of that. We were really seeing Okada just get beat up, and it makes you bond more with him. I don't like Shibata's headbutts. I never have.
No.
I've tweeted about how he needed to not do them. I felt they were, he does a lot of things that are too punishing on his body. He's clearly been wrestling when he shouldn't have been with his shoulder, but he kept going and he kept wrestling. So he's clearly one of those wrestlers. And with the headbutts, I think you don't mess around with concussions. And I think there are certain moves that you don't do. Part of it, Dan and I as promoters, there are moves that we will not allow wrestlers to do on our shows. And there are certain things that we will not allow them to take, because they are not worth it. And sometimes wrestlers get carried away, and in the moment they're like, no, but this will be amazing. It's like, it might look amazing, but is that worth your life?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not. Or the life of people around you, as some cases might be. It's not worth it to that level. And even on a massive platform like with New Japan, it's still not worth it. I think you could have taken that out and the match would have been just as good.
Yeah.
I really honestly do. Okada, the only person who should take the belt off him is Omega. The finish had to happen like that, and I like the finish. I think Okada should be Superman, and I think Omega should beat him. But that's just what I think will be a great moment, that he can keep going through these people and that he has all these different types of matches. So Suzuki tortured him, and he still just about won. Kenny took him to his absolute limit, and he just about won, but he never hit the one-winged angel. And we had Shibata just completely just proper beat him up, and he still won. And I think it's going to be good to see all of these different styles of matches of people taking Okada to their limits, and then it's going to be Kenny coming back, getting in that mindset again without his tassely tights, and he should be the one that takes the belt. And I would like to see this story long term like that,
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to get a 5-star match out of Farley. I don't think
so. I mean, it sounds like I'm complaining about the finish here, but I'm really not. Like, it did seem a bit sort of like I said, a bit Superman-ish, but like you've said, the story where he's being taken to his absolute limit every time and he's just managing to squeak out a victory and keep the title. I really, really like that story. And I really like the way they've taken it so far and the way they're going to keep taking it. Because like you said, he is facing a different type of opponent every time. And now he's going to face the Giant next time. And we'll see what he manages to do with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it is a cool story where, who else is there out there? Like, what direction do we think they're going to go after long term? If we say, I don't know, when do we think Omega will, when do you think Omega will make that return to take the title then? Do you think it'll be like later this year, next year? Do you think it'll be in the next couple of months?
I don't know, because it's, their booking is so long term. It wouldn't surprise me if it was Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah. Genuinely wouldn't surprise me. I don't know, because we're still, it's, I don't get what they're going to do after Farley, but it's, I don't think it's going to be Omega.
That's the thing.
We're not there yet.
Yeah.
I was thinking either you go to Omega after Farley and that's where it happens, or you continue the story of different types of opponents, but then what different types of opponents do we have left that he hasn't already faced and beaten?
Well, I mean, yeah, you had Marufuji. Really, this story starts with Marufuji last year, doesn't it?
Mm.
And then every title defense has been since then has been hot. And obviously, he wrestled Marufuji in what, September, October last year, and he couldn't defend the title until Wrestle Kingdom. So, you know, and there's a couple of milestones that Kevin Kelly and Don Callis mentioned is the next two people for this length of title reign are going to be Tatsumi Fujinami and Shinya Hashimoto. And okay, you're in serious legends territory there. If he has a title reign that lasts longer than Fujinami and has more defenses than Fujinami, then they're doing something really, really special with him. They're trying to get the greatest championship run ever out of him. And
I think they are.
Yeah, and so if they're trying to tell that story, there's the layers of the story. He's facing different opponents all the time, but from his point of view, he's trying to get to the goal of being the greatest IWGP heavyweight champion ever.
Mm.
You know, and that's a story they can tell, and it's not something they've really tried for a long while. So yeah, I could see that, and they can then start doing the comparisons to Fujinami and Hashimoto, and will he make it? Won't he make it? And you know, the stumbling blocks in the path can get bigger and bigger, can't they?
I think when it's getting time to be him and Omega again, I feel like we're going to know. I don't think it's going to be Omega with his tassely tights on suddenly saying, I want this shot now and challenging, and he's suddenly serious. I think it's going to be more of a build. I think we're going to know that Omega's coming back and he's going for it again.
Yeah.
Do you think because Omega wins the G1 2 years in a row?
Yeah, that's my theory, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, but yeah.
I hate doing theories like that, because it's like if I'm, I don't know, it's embarrassing when you're like, it's the being a woman thing again. I found like if I ever came out with any predictions as a woman, if you're off, oh my God, people would tear into me, and it makes you feel really like, well, I don't want to say what I think might happen, but I know you guys won't do that, so.
No, of course we won't.
And screw anyone who will. I'm too old to be caring about that now. So, yeah, I think Omega might win G1 2 years in a row and take the title of Okada. There you go. That's my prediction.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have a prediction, Alex?
I don't know. Like, maybe that...
It's really hard.
I think I've narrowed it down to maybe two possible ways, where it's either that, where Omega wins G1 and we have the match at Wrestle Kingdom next year, or Omega beats Okada at Dominion after the Farley defense, and then you have Omega as champion going into these American shows, then Okada wins the G1 and comes back and wins it back at Wrestle Kingdom. I don't know. I think I
agree that with you, but it's a very un-New Japan thing to take the short term.
Exactly. That's why I'm a bit sort of like, I don't know. But then I'm just thinking, if you have Omega wins the G1 and challenges the Wrestle Kingdom, who do we fill the sort of next couple of months with after Farley up until the G1?
Oh, Kota wants to work with Kenny, right?
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen before he's with Okada.
I don't know what they're going to do with Okada, but Kota has got to work with Kenny because that's why he didn't go to Kenny Omega literally said that there was a friend that he had stuff planned with and that he wanted to do. Kota's like the most elusive tweeter ever. And he's been throwing things out there, hinting at that. Those two are going to work together because they, you know, Kota wants to.
See, my mad conspiracy theory is coming true, Alex.
So what? So Omega's beating Okada for the title, then Tiger Mask W's winning the G1.
Yeah, I guess that's it. To follow through my conspiracy theory,
I think Kota will be Kota when he faces Kenny.
Right, okay.
I think he enjoys being Tiger Mask W, but I think he will be... I think he wants to be him when he... That's just me. I've not heard anything or heard any rumors or any hints. That's just, I think he would want to be him because he's been so open about wanting to work with him. I think he'd want to work as himself. But.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't been long-term listening, I had this mad conspiracy theory that Kota Ibushi left to go to WWE to give Kenny room to go for the championship and become a main event player to come back later on. And it basically meant that Gedo, Jado, Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega had been working Triple H for the last 6 months. It was a mad conspiracy theory, but the more I think about
all
it...
All the pieces are coming together.
Man, my mad conspiracy theory was that Kota was working and stringing along WWE to build his name to help New Japan.
Yeah.
So that to build his name in the States because they were wanting to break the States. So that was my conspiracy theory, was that he was a team guy.
Mine and yours are very similar. So.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Not suggesting that Triple H could be worked. I'm sure he couldn't. But yeah.
Alcote is amazing. And if anyone could work them, I think it would be him, but this is purely because I wouldn't be surprised. My theory is also, you know, everyone says they offered him 3 contracts.
Yeah.
They offered a contract 3 times. I think it was the same contract and Kota kept losing it. I think they had to just keep literally sending out the contract to him. And he was like, oh man, I don't have a printer. In Japan, they still use fax machines quite a lot, so Triple H is like trying to search all of America to find a damn fax machine and fax it over to him. This is my theories of what actually happened.
Yeah, it could possibly happen. All right, then we did have some sad stuff to talk about. During that match, as we alluded to earlier, Katsuyori Shibata delivered a sickening headbutt. A truly sickening headbutt was the only kind of move I've seen recently that made me go, ah. It was actually audible on the camera microphones. That's how hard it was. It split Katsuyori the hard way instantly. And after the match, he collapsed backstage. He was rushed to hospital and was diagnosed with a subdural hematoma and required emergency surgery. Now, the only latest news I have on that is from Strieger, noted Cage Match and Pro Wrestling Illustrated journalist, who said that the translations he picked up from Japanese news was that Shibata had to go to University Hospital Tokyo, and the neurosurgeon there has suggested that if he ever wants to wrestle again, he's going to have a lot more checkups and be a lot more conservative in his approach. So, as you were saying earlier, Emily, there are some moves you just don't want to do, and this probably wasn't necessary for this match.
It wasn't. Yeah. I worry a lot about wrestlers' health.
Yeah.
And moves that, like, Okada's another one who takes moves that aren't necessary. He did it in the Omega match, from the top rope, was it?
Yeah, the dragon suplex from the top rope.
Dragon suplex. He didn't need to take that.
No.
I don't think it was necessary. And Okada's a bugger for taking moves from people that are too short, is the gist of it. He shouldn't be taking moves from people who are certain moves. You need the person to be the same height or taller than you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just, yeah. So I think he's terrible for taking certain moves. But yeah, Shibata doesn't take care of his body.
No.
He clearly doesn't, and you shouldn't mess around with things to do with concussions. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Apart from apparently him.
Yeah.
So I hope he makes a full recovery. I hope he's able to wrestle, and I hope he never ever does a headbutt again.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, really. And I think Alex would probably echo that.
Yeah, pretty much that. I mean, He's been doing these stupid headbutts for so long now. Like, there were so many matches with him and Ishii especially where they do them. And every time it's just like, why? Like, you know that wrestling's a work, right? Like, you don't actually have to headbutt skull to skull. It's just, it never made sense to me. And I don't think there was ever really a place for it. But
no.
I don't know if it was some sort of weird, like, oh, I've got to prove that I'm the toughest guy, or whether he just genuinely was just, for lack of a better word, being dumb about it and just didn't think. I don't know. But there was never a place for it. And hopefully this will be the wake-up call he needed if he is actually able to wrestle again. Like, I really, really hope he is, because Katsuyori Shibata is my favorite wrestler in New Japan. But I don't know. It's one of those things where if that doctor's right and he's damaged himself to such a point where he is going to have to go through these strenuous medical checks before every single match, and then even then it's only a maybe if he'll actually be able to wrestle those matches, is he going to be able to actually wrestle again? And is he going to be able to have these big matches that he has been sort of building towards? And I don't know. It's, we were talking about it again off recording for a little bit about, is there a way he can change up his style to a point where it is safer for him to work? Like, we mentioned Daniel Bryan and how he said in interviews that with his history of concussions, he's developed a style that he thinks is a much safer way of working, where he won't have to take those bumps on his head and neck, and he thinks he'll still be able to have entertaining matches but won't be as dangerous. Is there a way Shibata could do the same thing, or is his style such that this is it and this is how he has to do it, and if he can't do it like this, he's not going to do it at all?
I think, I mean, there's the point of, as Emily was saying, like, you know, the characters in New Japan are very much extensions of the person that's doing them. And whether his character would allow that, I'm not really sure, because with what we've seen. But there are plenty of people who've reinvented themselves. I mean, Emily, you said Marufuji, but Jushin Thunder Liger is the classic example. He's reinvented himself like four times because he couldn't be as aerial once he shattered his ankle. He couldn't, you know, he had a brain tumor. He's had other injuries, which meant he's had to refocus what he does. And he's still a vital part of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, you know, and there's arguments, well, maybe Liger is getting, really should be retiring now, but he seems to be endlessly youthful. But I'm not really sure. I can't really answer that question. It's down to Shibata and whether he's willing to make that work for himself. And I hope he does, because he's an absolutely fantastic talent.
I would like him. I desperately hope he does. I don't think he can, and I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Because any matches of his that you go back and watch, he's always wrestled the same. And he started after G1 trying to add in some new mannerisms. Did anyone else notice that?
Yeah, he tried to vary things a bit.
Yeah, he tried to add in like a smile, which was
At the New Japan Cup, he finally added the sort of, oh, celebrating on the top rope, pointing to the crowd. Like, he's gearing up for that big babyface run.
Exactly. But and after his dropkick into the corner, he the kneely hand thing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do it every time. And every time he did it, he looked sickened by himself, which I felt added to it. He did it and he was like, oh, I can't believe I did that. This is, and he looked genuinely, and he wouldn't always do it. And sometimes he'd just half do it and then just kind of give up partway through, like, no, I can't. This is, it's too much. It's too much. And that's why I don't think he can, because he couldn't even consistently add in a bit of a fancy mannerism to do after you move.
Yeah.
And I worry that he is just that way. I think if it's just a case of not taking certain moves and not headbutting, I think he could do that.
Yeah.
But if he had to do a complete change up of his wrestling style, I actually don't think he can. And again, I hope I'm wrong, because he's one of my favorite wrestlers to watch. But looking at his work, and he's someone who, whenever I'm on New Japan World, I've watched pretty much every match they've got of his on there, every singles match they've got of his on there. And he was someone whose matches I used to watch as well. So I just don't think he can change his style. Even if you like go back and looked how he wrestled when he was in Noah,
I was watching one of those matches recently. It's pretty much the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It's even better. Stuff like the forearms and the elbows, which they're going to rock you when you take them, and that's not good for the head either. It's just even little things like that, which are such an ingrained part of his wrestling style.
If he really strengthens his neck, because his neck's not that thick. If you look at Kurt Angle's neck now, huge. Yeah. If he could just kind of, I don't know why I said it like that. If he could, like, do more for his neck, I don't know, I'm reaching.
Oh, no, I mean, Ishii wrestles a similar hard man style, but he's got the body type to take that kind of punishment. And you look down at those older wrestlers that even way back, like Bert Azzarati in the 1960s, he was the first European serious hard guy wrestler, as tough as they came. And he was built like a brick outhouse. He could bench press 500 pounds. You know, he was in the 50s and 60s, which was not the norm. But those guys, and today you look at Ishii, you look at Stan Hansen, Steve Williams, Terry Gordy, all those guys, Western or Japanese, big, thick, upper tree trunk body, big, thick neck. Take all those suplexes and backdrop drivers and, you know, right, sorry, Steve Williams and Terry Gordy are no longer with us, but none of that was to do with the moves they took in All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 1990s. It was all to do with, well, in Steve Williams' case, it was cancer, and in Terry Gordy's case, it was the other stuff he was up to off the clock. So it's, you know, Stan Hansen looks like a very fit and vital young man, really. In fact, he looks better now than he did in his heyday. So I think you're right. It's like body type is another issue. To wrestle that style, you need a certain body type to be able to get away with it.
Shibata is so slim as well. I was shocked when I met him because I don't know, his face is kind of chubby looking, I suppose.
Mm, yeah.
I thought he's actually the only wrestler who I've met who had a completely different physique, whose physique really threw me, because he's really small, I suppose. He's got a really, naturally, he's a tall, long, thin man, like quite a lot like Zach, I suppose. But Zach looks small. Shibata seems to have a way where he holds himself and he looks bigger. But it is sometimes, because I'm quite a tall woman. I'm only 5'10", but it's quite tall for a woman. I've got broad shoulders. Sometimes I'll meet guys, and I just, especially wrestlers, and I feel oversized.
Yeah.
And I feel quite big. And he was one of the ones where I was shocked with. I was like, oh, I feel like a giant human near you. And he was bigger than me, but I was still very big.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like someone like I met Yoshihashi, I knew I was going to be bigger than him, and that was fine. And Kota, I didn't feel big around. He's very broad and his muscles are quite thick, whereas Shibata is a very thin man.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not conducive to wrestling that kind of style either.
It's not built for it.
No. And there's other cases. Dynamite Kid, Brandon O'Brien, and other guys that their bodies couldn't take the punishment they were putting them through because of their size.
Dynamite Kid wasn't meant to be that size.
No, he wasn't. Yeah. It's a sad
story. That's why I worry about that little young lion. He's not meant to be that size. And his body's going to let him know.
Yeah. Yeah, it will do eventually.
I think it will happen very soon. Mm. I'm giving him a year. I said to Dan when I saw it, I'm like, he's going to get a bad injury within the year. It just is happening.
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing to say, like a tear. I don't mean he's not going to be out forever. I think. It's going to be like a Triple H kind of deal.
Yeah, it's something that he'll fix. And if he changes his style and changes his body type, he'll be able to get away with an awful lot more.
Mm. But speaking of injuries, that's two members of the roster now out with these serious injuries, Shibata and Honma. I don't know if it's something with the overall New Japan sort of wrestling style as a whole, or whether it's just two sort of freak accidents that have happened close to each
other
or
two
what.
Two flukes.
Yeah, I think it's a mix and match of both, because the guys that have been in the actual ridiculous matches like Hiromu, Dragon Lee, Kenny Omega and Okada, they're all right, relatively speaking. I'm not saying that they're having a whoopsie-daisy of a time with their body, but, you know, they've not had registered injuries. They've not been off and they've taken any time off. So, yeah, it's... the freak accidents, but accidents wait to happen as well because of the pressure there is they're putting on themselves now to have these great matches.
I think Honma was a build-up of long-term damage. His is a scary one.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say.
Because he was another guy that did that sort of similar Shibata style for the longest time, so...
Yeah, and it was...
Why, if you want to be a wrestler, strengthen your neck, wear knee pads,
keep flexibility in your muscles and do the bloody neck exercises.
Yeah.
Also learn to drive.
Definitely learn to drive, please.
Learn to drive. And what's really handy, if just putting out information now, if you send like your CV to promoters, if you want to be the most handy wrestler ever and make it very likely to get a job, not only be able to drive, but it's really nice if you're like, I notice you run shows in Colchester and London. On my way there, I live near so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and could pick them up. Because that's actually very handy if you want to get
them. Also, when you make your entrance, look around, see where the hard cam is, look that way.
Yeah, always check where the cameras are. Yeah, that's very handy for the footage.
Because
that's why ResGal's really hard, because the cameras are kind of dotted around. And I changed my ring announcing style last time, and I tried to do it more to the hard cam, and it was rubbish. I'm just going to go back to talking to the crowd. it's flattening everything. So I ring announce to the crowd now, because it's probably the one place where ring announcing to the camera does not work.
Fair enough. And also, you don't get as much drink and many drinks if you're just ring announcing to the camera.
Oh, I do love my drink. I had a really bad sore throat at the last show, and so legitimately, when I did one of the shots, my voice completely went. And I kept trying to cough to get it back, and I'm like, my voice is just, it just went. It was just gone, and luckily it came back, but the next day I could barely speak. I probably shouldn't have done that.
It's harder because the chairs were there, and it was more difficult to get drinks to you as well. So, you know.
I feel bad. I think I'm going to buy a couple of bottles to go behind the bar. for the next one. You know, I drunk the resistance bar out of whiskey. Fully, every whiskey was gone that they had. I felt so embarrassed. I just kind of went behind and started working behind the door, the bar at the London Lucha League show. Because they didn't quite have enough people around. So, and my other job is barmaid. So I was like, I can do this. I'll help out. And someone asked for whiskey and coke. And I was like, there is none. And I asked them, like, have you got any in the back or anywhere? And they're like, no, Emily, you drank it all. I don't look like I can drink a lot of alcohol, but I really, really can.
Like, it's a talent and a skill.
It is. Dan can't drink much alcohol at all.
No, I can't either. I had a beer last night, and I was like, that'll do me. That's fine. I was out with my friends last night. So
I don't do well on beer or wine. If I want to get super drunk super quickly, one glass of wine and I'm done. Ridiculous.
Right then. Well, that just about covers everything for Secura Genesis today. So I would like to thank my guests, Mr. Alex Edwards. That's Alex_Edwards. Is it underscore as well?
Another underscore. Alex_Edwards
on Twitter. You can talk to him there about pro wrestling and other stuff. And please do. Thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be back.
And I'd like to thank very much Miss Emily Reed. That's at Geek Britannia on Twitter. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I'm going to mention, as you said, I run Pro Wrestling Eve, and we have shows on the 20th and 21st of May, Babes with the Power. And you should very much come along to those.
You should, because they're absolutely amazing, fun shows, which I've been to two of them, and they're awesome.
At Pro Wrestling Eve on Twitter. There you go. Just had to do a cheap plug there.
And you want to plug XWA as well?
XWA UK on Twitter. We also have awesome shows coming up. We're the crazy COTA fireworks people. we're the weird promotion. We used to be FWA. People kind of forgot about XWA. It got maybe a bit lost in the shuffle. And people forgot that we do consistently very good shows using very good wrestlers. And some wrestlers like Johnny Storm, Jody Fleisch, Doug Williams, that people, I don't know, somehow forgot are still extremely good.
Yeah, yeah, they are.
Very weird. They're like, oh, we want all these people. And it's like, come along to our shows, you'll see those people, you'll see the new people, you'll see a load of people from different promotions in Japan who are phenomenal wrestlers, and you'll see the wrestlers that maybe you've forgotten about in well-rounded and quite bonkers shows.
Yeah, and the talk of American late night TV.
The talk of it, I know, that was a bit exciting.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for your time today. Thank you very much for listening to the WrestleTalk Podcast Network, where you will find the squash with the return of Ben Spindler. who's taken over from Paul Taylor with Gavin Duenas as well. If you want more listening wrestling podcast content, please subscribe to Wrestle Plus, where you will find me and Findlay Martin talking about US wrestling history, as well as every show we've done in the past. Thank you very much for listening today. Take care. Next week, I think we'll be back with the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Wrestling, and I think we're looking at Real World Tag League 1990, the best tag team tournament of all time, in my personal opinion anyway. So hope you enjoy that. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye! We'll be right back.